Looking for mystery and suspense? Well, check out Cuckoos Wear Black. Richard and Julia are a young couple living in Stockingham, England, but Richard's mother has just died, and he and Julia have a grim task of sorting through her old belongings. As they search through boxes and boxes of archives, they come across a set of old photos. But something is seriously wrong, and Julia realizes that? Well, you have to visit cuckooswearblack.com to find out exactly what's going on.
Now broadcasting the webcomic Beacon.
Hello and welcome to episode 131 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, and we are hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com. I'm Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com, and because this is a spliced episode, I don't have introductions for it, but I do have Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com and Tanya Higgins of DaisiesAndShit.com. And we also have Melissa Kircher, also known as Chibutikin, from TinLizardProductions.com, but also a podcast that she's on called The Geek Life at TheGeekLife.tv, I believe. And now we can, on the last episode of the Webcomic Beacon, we were talking about a crash course to webcomics, because I had talked about that as a presentation at Minneapolis Indie Expo. But first we're going to have an interview that I had with Evan Dom of Rice Boy from the Minneapolis Indie Expo. And here it is.
Well, already. Since we're already 10 minutes after, we're going to go ahead and get started, and hopefully people that still come in will catch where we're going with this thing. But everyone, welcome to Mix. And this is a webcomics panel of sorts. I'm Fess of a weekly topical podcast called The Webcomic Beacon, which you can find out at webcomicbeacon.com. Part of the show will be recorded for that for tomorrow, which we'll be recording the 130th episode. Normally I have a couple of co-hosts, but right now I just have a special guest, Evan Dom of Rice Boy.
Hello.
And get it off the record, it's rice-boy.com for those interested.
That is correct. So I have free postcards if you come by my table.
Well, thank you for being here today. After I picked you up from the airport, it took some convincing to get you to come on my show. Mostly, I wouldn't let you out of the car, but anyway. So you have a few different comics that are online, which are known as web comics, which I'll be going through after the show on the crash course of web comics. But you primarily work on a comic called Rice Boy, or you used to. But you got other stuff going on. Right now we have some images of Rice Boy. They're taken out of context, so you will not know what's going on. And so can you tell us a little bit about what Rice Boy is?
Okay. Rice Boy is my first big, huge comic. I finished it about 2 years ago. It's sort of in the vein of your Lord of the Rings, like, standard epic fantasy end of the world story, but it's in a very strange visual context. And it sort of, I think, lays the foundation for an invented world called Overside, which is where all of my comics that I'm making since then are all set. So it's sort of a psychedelic, colorful take on a pretty straightforward sort of a story, like the hero's journey sort of story.
One thing that I really like about the comic is that you don't see a whole lot of material like this in webcomics. What I mean is mostly the utilization of pantomime and something also called ambient montage, which I'm pointing from Lem, who does Blanket, of just scene setting, traveling. Like, there are many scenes where there's no dialogue going on, but there's like scenery and just traveling. So you see a lot of pantomime in like The Intrepid Girlbot and The Dawn of Time. So what were your thoughts in using these storytelling methods?
I really like the phrase ambient montage. That's nice. It was probably just, to start with, I didn't know how else to convey, these are like, you know, quest stories, and I didn't know how else to convey, you know, characters going from point A to point B, and it takes a long time to get there. But I think I've got more of a feel for it, and I'm trying to rely as heavily on visuals as possible. Like, the dialogue is kind of spare when it is in my comics, because I find that sort of uninteresting. The most important thing to me is to convey the story with pictures.
Given that, you know, it's comics.
So. Yeah, it seems like the best use of the medium to me.
And with that, another thing that stands out aside from that are the character designs. Some of you have been seeing some of the things that have been up here. I mean, even this is like, what the hell are you smoking, dude? I mean, really. You don't have to say, but, you know, where did some of the ideas for these character designs come from?
I just sort of doodle until I have ideas. And from the beginning, I thought it would be cool to make a story in an invented world with absolutely no human beings. And just sort of make up weird-looking creatures as I move along. And I like robots, so there's some robot characters. And
so you're just, like, doodling odd characters? Like,
yeah,
that could be a race.
Sometimes it shows up in your head clearly, and sometimes you have to work through it. And it's,
oh, like that crazy one.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Now, this is a completed story, but when you were updating, what was the update schedule like? When did, when did you start, and how long did it take to finish it?
I started Rice Boy in, like, April of 2006, and I don't really remember what the update schedule was. I think by the end of it, I had done an average of a page every 2 days, and now I'm up to a page every day on average. Okay. So I updated, like, a chunk of pages weekly, I think. But it was not a regular schedule.
One thing I did want to go into, this would be known as, this comic that really feels like it's written for the archives. If you didn't update daily or frequently enough, some of the pages may not feel like it's a payoff for that particular update, even though it's very important.
Yeah.
Because I felt disappointed, at the same time as privileged, to get to read the whole archive. Because I got to see everything that happened next right away.
Well, that's the way that it's made. I mean, I make these as books, basically. I'm not using the internet to make a webcomic in the way that webcomics are usually published. I'm using it as a tool to build an audience for my material. So I feel like it suffers if it's read with the updates. It suffers a little.
But this is where I was a little disappointed, because it's completed. So I can't be a part of it. Ooh, what's going to happen next?
No,
it's kind of like finding out this band that you absolutely love, and you go, look, no, they've broken up. They're not on tour anymore. It's like you kind of missed out a little bit. Yeah. That's what I mean.
But I feel like I've emphasized so much that I'm kind of, like, as you say, I'm writing for the archives. Like, I'm making finished pieces.
Mm-hmm. And you're sharing your progress, mostly.
Yeah. But I'm emphasizing that aspect so much that there's more people discovering it and reading through all of it anew. Now,
yeah.
There would be if I was just doing, like, a cat-a-day thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe, I don't know for sure, but maybe a completed webcomic is a little bit easier to sell, since...
It is to some people, but, I mean, some people like webcomics so you can follow along.
Particularly with the story one, anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see here. So I guess we weren't looking for more so like the current online status, but, you know, that finished project. Let's see here. Okay, now you have another comic, which I have some images that would be kind of coming up after this, but there's another one called Order of Tales. And now this one is not done in this color, and I just have to wait for those images to come up, but... It is a black and white, but it's not like black and white lines, and it looks like it hasn't been colored yet. It's actually inked like a proper black and white comic, where you're adding the extra shading with the ink, and there's full black spots, you know, because there's a difference in how you can do black and white properly versus it could be finished yet bucket fill color or something. It doesn't seem like that. No, I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing because it was like, oh crap, there's like a whole big archive.
That was like 750 pages or something.
Yeah. This one's like 3-4.
It's 440 pages.
Yeah. And I think there was a little bit, I think there was, from what I saw, it seemed like there was a lot more dialogue in it, but it still had to have some of that ambient montage.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't, as far as that goes, I'm just sort of going by ear. Like, I don't really have an idea of how the flow will go until I'm making it. But Order of Tales, I just finished that like a month ago, and it's, I guess it started as something to elaborate on the world that Rice Boy, that I built sort of haphazardly in Rice Boy. Like, Order of Tales is a more solid thing, I feel like. And it's black and white because I was sick of coloring and because I felt like it was... I do feel like it's a story that lends itself to that, and I do things that I couldn't really have done in color, and it's a more, like, dramatic story and a less, like, you know, ambient, atmospheric story. But I still don't think that I will ever, it will ever, ever be as popular as anything that I do in color, just because nobody gives a shit about black and white, basically.
I don't know. There's an audience out there, as long as you can do it well enough.
There's an audience, but I feel like it's small.
Let's see here. With Order of Tales, now, this is set in the same universe as the Rice Boy universe.
It's called Overside the World.
Overside.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. As far as I can tell, this takes place possibly hundreds of years before Rice Boy.
Yeah, it's like 600 years before.
600.
So it's, in some ways, it shows how things got to be the way they were for Rice Boy, but in a lot of ways, it's mostly detached. My new comic that I just started after finishing Order of Tales is like around 1,500 years before that. So I like the idea of, like, setting it in technically the same world, but separate enough historically to where you're effectively rebuilding the world with each story.
Okay. And that new one that you're working on is called Batu.
Yes, Batu.
And again, we're still in Rice Boy here. Because we started, like, 10 minutes late, so this was time for a different setting. But so you have Batu. You just started. And this one is in color.
Yes.
I guess there's not really a whole lot to say about it, since you're still setting it up, and if any more you say about it, will give way too much.
Yeah, I'm trying not to talk too much about it, but it's in color, and I think it's like, it looks, I'm really happy with how it looks. But it's going to be like, Order of Tales and Rice Boy are both definitely hero's journey archetype stories, and this is not going to be that at all. It's going to be enormous and, you know.
So, might you, like, maybe after that, when you do one that's like a million years before and it's just a big collection of pictures of Homoyo Ooze? I don't know, how far back you might go?
No, I'm sort of just following, like, rat holes in the history that interest me, so.
Okay. Do you have, like, some other ideas for, like, other parts of history that, that you might revisit as a future comic project?
Yeah, I hope to start on some stuff that's not set in this world within the next year or so, but there are, like, certain things that I touch in Order of Tales and Rice Boy that don't get explored very much, mm-hmm. that I feel like I could do interesting stuff with. There it is. This is Order of Tales now.
Yeah, this is Order of Tales now, and still it's going to take a while to go through that, but, let's see here. You also have some other on your site. There's, like, if you saw the first image, there was, like, Batu, Rice Boy, Order of Tales, and then there's some short stories. Now, I did not get a chance to go through your short stories, but could you talk about some of those a little bit?
Yeah, short stories are just, like, most of my ideas, if I let them sort of fester, they turn into these things that will only be finished if they're 1,000 pages long. So I try to start things that I can just finish quickly. And I've been doing that based on donations where I'll ask for a certain goal, and when that goal is reached, I'll put up a story. And I think that's a cool way to give everybody something and still make an immediate profit off of it.
Right.
But
so like donation incentives, you know,
special
bonus side stories.
It is a bonus and everybody gets it based on the few people that donate, so I think that's cool.
And are these also still in the Rice Boy world?
Yeah, everything that I have online at this point is in the same world. So they're all sort of spread out throughout history, and there's going to be more.
Well, and then they're all like kind of like picked in some sort of part in history, and not directly tied with each other, or just some tied with each other a little bit more, like the main Rice Boy story? Or?
Yeah, one in particular is tightly tied to it, and there's a few others that have... The characters Calabash and the One Electronic are, like, these immortal saint characters who, like, because they've been around for so long, show up all throughout history and want to do a bunch of stories, like...
Were those the pillar things, or...?
No, the guy with the TV head.
Yeah, I know the One Electronic is the guy with the...
Calabash is like the bear guy with the ears.
Kind of big. He looks like... He would make a good plush, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
So...
I think Rice Boy would make a good one.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm going to do that sometime.
Totally, and just keep people out, too. Rice Boy, how'd you come up with that design? I mean, really, I mean, it's like a little mushroom thing.
Yeah, Rice Boy was something I doodled in, like, high school. And he's made some, by far, the oldest thing that I'm still drawing at all. You know, when I started drawing him, I thought it would be interesting to put him in, like, a... Kind of incongruous to put him in, like, a big adventure story with all these... things happening because he's so tiny and boring.
You really get the feel of it when you first start reading Rice Boy. He's just like, good little guy.
And he's like the simplest possible thing I could work with emotionally.
Yeah.
Sort of. So,
hello, would you like some tea?
Yeah.
Let's see here. I have a few standard interviewish questions, which I guess I usually don't bring up a whole lot, but I feel that they're important, kind of. First of all, did you go to school for art?
For like the first year and a half, I went to Appalachian State in North Carolina. For the first like year and a half that I was there, I was studying art. And so I think that I owe a lot to like classical drawing courses.
Okay.
But my major's in Spanish. So I don't, most, I mean, and even if I had majored in English, the vast majority of this just is self-taught of necessity, I think.
Do you feel like it was worth it in some aspects? It was on the
whole
ways.
I mean, yeah. No,
like
I
you did take some from it. Okay. What about you said you mentioned in Spanish? Does that come up in your artwork at all? In your stories?
Maybe a little. I'm really interested in like language, and that sort of gave me a framework for understanding how that worked.
Okay.
And I do some stuff with language in the stories, like. There's a bunch of invented scripts. There's no invented languages, but there's invented like ways of writing.
Well, there were those weird little one-eyeball head people that were talking in shapes, essentially.
Right, they speak in like ideograms, which is cool.
Yeah.
Ideograms.
Yeah.
Everything that I'm interested in, I funnel into this project somehow.
We got Vatu going a little bit more.
This is my brand new thing.
Yeah.
Which is way better than anything
else. Yeah, you only have like 12 strips, so I only like just a few shots. When did you first start working in comics? Inspirations, influences? Like, you know, everyone, a lot of kids just start doodling, but when do you start comics, sequential art?
I've been drawing like forever. I've been drawing comics off and on since probably like I was 10 or something. Rice Boy is my first serious project, but this is like influences. I guess like Craig Thompson was a big like Blankets was a really important book for me to see what comics could do, and I think I owe a lot to Jeff Smith and to Mike Mignola and Frank Miller and Chris Ware maybe. I don't know. Like I like all these people, but I don't really know how they figure into my work.
All right, so before we wrap things up, are there any of your favorite webcomics that you would like to go ahead and pin?
Oh, okay.
Just a few, though. We don't have all day.
I think Templar Arizona is one of my favorites, and she's right, like, two tables down from me. And Akewood has been my favorite for a long, long time. A-C-H-E, Wood. What else? I guess those are my favorites.
Okay.
I don't read that many books.
All right. Well, that's about it all of the time we have for today for a speedy run through. But Evan, thanks very much for coming to Mix and for being on the Webcomic Beacon.
Thank you.
I forgot to ask, does anybody have any questions? Oh, well, I guess not.
Sure, I got one.
Loud and boldly.
In Rice Boy, I remember when Rice Boy goes into that giant archival library, and there's like two rows of statues. I remember seeing, I think the Dornish Wood Giant and like the figure that kind of looked like Thor.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if there were like seven other ones. I was just wondering if any of those other ones are going to pop up in future comics, or is it something?
When I was drawing that part of Rice Boy, I was doing like intensive preparatory work for Order of Tales. So that is what Cork looked like at that stage of development. And also, another character from Order of Tales is one of those statues. And the Derlish Wood, the Tree Keeper character is also there. But that was all, like, just because that was what I was working on at the time, I guess. Yeah.
In the comics that you would work on that don't like take place in Overside, do you have any idea what type of genre you would want to work in?
I really want to do science fiction, and I really hope to start something to that effect this year, but who knows?
Yes.
How far into the story of Rice Boy did you know that the one electronic was the full color?
I think I knew that fairly early. I didn't like... It was a spoiler.
Yeah. Spoiler, yeah.
I didn't really have a tight outline for that, but I knew basically how it would end from very early. So it sort of wanders around in the middle, but I knew that pretty early.
Alright. Yes?
Are you gonna print out the Order of the Tales, the whole 700 and whatever, like you did for Rise?
Yeah, probably next year or sometime.
So the first book is, how much of this is it?
That is... it's about a third.
A third of it, okay. Well, already. If there are any other last questions, because we got to move on to our next panel. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks once again.
Have news, questions, comments, or advertising inquiries? Transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or dial 1-320-310-0922.
I am pre-recording this for a future episode, and I am talking with Anizumi and Harknell of Intervention Con, which you can find at interventioncon.com, which is coming up this September. Welcome to the segment.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, I totally gave you the wrong time last time. And I didn't get to have you on the show, but I did at least mention it, so awesome. People could get a quick look-see. So, from what I hear is, let's start with this. What is Intervention?
Intervention is a creator-focused art and technology convention. This year, we're primarily focused on webcomics because that's who I am and that's who I know. But we also cover, you know, bloggers, podcasters, people who post things to YouTube. If you use the internet to deliver your stuff to your fans, that's us.
Yes. As well as actually focusing on the creators, we also do other things too. We have, you know, a dance. We have a Dr. Sketchy's event. We have some hands-on web development workshops.
Oops, sorry.
Does that mean I won a prize?
Yeah.
No, that was...
He said the secret word!
That's my
Jerry!
That was my chat sound. Sorry about that. So.
That's okay. Yeah. That was kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah, wow. So, yes, we have a large number of webcomics guests, everybody from Megatokyo, through PC Weenies, Evil Incorporated. And we're also doing things like showing some films. We have the Harvey Putter and the Ridiculous Premise, which just got released recently. It's an independent film, feature-length parody film of the Harry Potter films. And, you know, the fun sort of get together with your friends and, you know, hang out and...
Don't forget the two game rooms.
Game rooms.
Foam Brain Games is sponsoring our two game rooms. So we're going to have all kinds of, like, board games and card games and things going on. And it looks to be really awesome. We're going to have two LARPs, too.
So it runs the gamut from, you know, if you want to speak to creators to learn how to do or get tips on how to do your own stuff online, all the way over to... you know, traditional con stuff, like having fun, watching movies, listening to music and going to a dance, drawing and, you know, all kinds of other fun stuff.
How many years has this been around?
This is actually the premier event this year.
This is our first intervention. Everyone thinks we've been doing this for so long, but that's because we've been staffing other conventions for so long. So we came at this event with a more experienced eye, like, than somebody who just decided to run a con would have. And we have, I mean, each of our staff members have at least 5 to 10 years of experience running cons, and we have about 5.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been thinking about doing this convention for quite a number of years. So in many ways, when we put the website up, we put out the structure of the con, shows a lot of experience in the sense that, you know, as Oni said, we went forward with this by basically grabbing people who have done conventions much larger scale than what we're even doing for intervention, and had the experience to know how to do the event right. So once we got those people in place, we decided to go forward and do the event this year.
Yeah, and lucky for us, a lot of people have attended conventions that I've actually been in charge of the webcomic section for. So they know that we do really good events. We do things on the up and up, and we do things very organized. So that's why we have so many guests, because people have worked with us and they're like, holy crap, you know, you guys are doing this. We want in on this because we know how you guys work.
I see that there's Frump's going to be there with... what is he doing?
Frump, the lead programming developer for Comic Press,
right.
The theme for WordPress,
mm-hmm.
He is going to be doing a few different things. He will be on a few public panels, you know, regular panels that you would go to at a con, where you can, you know, if you have questions, ask him questions about the development, you know, tweaks, things like that. He's also going to be on a panel that talks about where they're going with Comic Press, because right now they're sort of in a transition between the old version of Comic Press and where they're going to. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that really want to kind of, you know, people who are using it right now or might use it want to know more about that. So he's going to be talking about those things. In addition, he's also going to be doing a hands-on workshop track. That track is actually an additional fee, depending on which actual workshop you want to go to. And the concept is small group, very intensive workshop. If, like, for instance, we have a basic workshop, though, that's really designed for people that haven't gotten their site set up yet or just kind of barely getting it up. The concept is for the 2 hours of that workshop, Frump will literally walk around and help you tweak the settings of your site. You know, it's one of those situations that you would never easily encounter in any other context, where the guy who wrote the software you're using will come over and say, hey, no, change these settings. This is how you need to do to set it up. The goal of the basic one is you don't have a site 2 hours from now, you're going to have a running site with Comic Press.
And here's the thing about the first workshop. He's actually giving away the cast add-on for free, which is, you know, to manage your cast bio pages for different members of your comic. He's actually giving that away for free, and it actually is worth $4 more
than
the workshop. So it's like you're saving $4, and you're getting kind of like – you're actually getting him to do it for you.
In many ways, yeah. But the main focus is, you know, being able to have somebody who actually – develops the most ubiquitous software out there to be able to help you tweak it to maximum effect.
Hmm.
You know, the maximum number of people in any of these things is 20. And that's going to give, you know, at least 5-10 minutes of direct communication with Frumpf to be able to, you know, sit there and basically tweak things out. Plus give you overall tips, you know, that you can definitely know you can get your questions in on.
Yeah. People can go to the website and check out, well, he has a sidebar notice you can just click on and find out more for people that are interested in Comic Press and WordPress.
Mm.
Other than that, so tell us about when and where this thing is.
It's in it's September 10th through 12th. It's at the Rockville, Washington, D.C. Hilton. It's basically the actual address, 1750 Rockville Pike, Rockville, Maryland.
All right, and pre-registration for those listening ends August 31st for $40, and after that, it's at the door.
Yep, 45.
Well, that's all the time we have for right now. All right, well, thank you very much for coming on and letting us know about this. And, of course, we will be sending our very own correspondent, Alex Heberling, of her. She's from her webcomic at Garanos.com and other sites. And so she'll be there kind of representing the webcomic beacon, and hopefully she'll get some good tidbits.
Cool.
Great. Thanks all for right. having us.
No problem. Thank Thanks for coming. And now back to our show. Now, let's see here. I'm going to check our email real quick. I know that there's some milestones. There's two milestones that people told me about yesterday in person. I don't remember what they are. That's why I said email. Email, email, email. That's how it works. That's this is milestones are my gift to those that want a little bit of free exposure. The only thing is, you have to email us. And we do have a milestone for Jazz and Jess of jazzandjess.com has hit 5 years old.
Yay!
Yay! We love you, Nate. I love you especially, though, because you're working so hard for me.
And I will mention one thing. I talked to Frumpf a little bit, and he said that there's this Webcomic Planet Collective ads widget thing. Webcomic Planet, I guess, is still kind of around. Might be a little bit of invite only. I didn't really know for sure, but he has this widget sort of thing designed. And basically, if you have a book for sale and you want to promote it with other people that have books for sale, it's kind of like you use it and, you know, to get on it, you have to put it on your site sort of thing. And as far as I saw it,
Girls with Slingshots, which I've mentioned a couple of times this episode, has just hit 1,000 posts this
week. Well, wow. Congratulations on that.
And I have one, too. XY has hit 500 comics, XWHY at comicgenesis.com. So, yay.
Well, all right. That's,
yay.
And look for those in our show notes, all that in our show notes. Advertising on the Webcomic Beacon right now, we have Master of the Martial Arts. Actually, most of these are just like to those things. I'll just mention them anyway. And some sort of like Haikusoru, the future is Japanese. Some sort of iBook store thing. There's some books or whatever. But we also have an actual webcomic advertising, and that's The Watcher of Yathugu at noodlyappendage.com/watcher. But we do have a sponsor this week.
Ooh. Oh, boy, do we? Oh, gosh. Oh.
And I will actually be recording these and putting those into the show later. But I'm going to go ahead and mention them because I'm giving more props to our sponsorship spot, which you can look at more at webcomicbeacon.com/advertise. And this is Cuckoos or Cuckoos? Cuckoos?
I don't know.
Cuckoos Wear Black at cuckooswearblack.com. And I will read just one of the pitches here. Well, I'll read one of the about. Cuckoos Wear Black is an ongoing collection of stories from Stockingham, England. Well, it'll be in a collection. Give it time, he says. Drawn in a traditional black and white style, the stories are mystery and suspense tales. The first in the collection is Richard and Julie's story, a couple whose lives are about to be turned upside down when they discover some unexpected photographs. Cuckoos Wear Black updates every Tuesday and Friday. And again, that's cuckooswearblack.com. And I'll be recording the pitches and placing them into the show after this. And that's just what we're doing.
I'll try not to laugh through the pitches, but that's just... I've had my life turned around by photographs.
Uh-oh.
Doubt.
That was just
dun,
funny.
Dun, dun.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. What?
So there's that, and I do thank our sponsor very much for sponsoring the Webcomic Beacon. And once again, you can find out more about advertising at webcomicbeacon.com/advertise. Once again, making the sponsorships more valuable, which is why I don't any longer put the Project Wonderful ads in the show notes. But I will mention them at least. So there's that. And we're getting Chibudikin on the phone right now.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. So yesterday was Mix, and the day before that was a Kickstarter party or something like that.
Well, it was the Mix pre-party. Yeah.
Which was at a bar.
It was at the 501 Club in Minneapolis. 501 Washington, Minneapolis. And so it was called the 501 Club, which kind of makes sense.
Because they couldn't think of a real name.
Well, they got another bar recently, and it's called the 331 Club, which is at 331 whatever street it's on.
Ooh, clever.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't remember anymore. But anyway, so at the 501, there is a Pac-Man / Ms. Pac-Man / Galaga machine, and that's awesome. So that's worth going alone to the 501, is for that machine.
If you're into local music, too, they have it's a great venue for local music. Always free to get in.
Ooh. Excellent.
Yes.
I'm so far away. Damn it.
Yeah, everyone should move to Minnesota. Mark?
Yes.
No, it's cold.
Well, we have habit trails. You don't actually have to go outside in winter. We have tunnel systems.
Yeah, in Minneapolis.
If anyone's ever seen me in the cold, you'll know why I'm a virgin.
Are there pictures? Oh, those the pictures you were talking about?
What pictures?
In the cold?
Oh, with me in the cold? Yeah. No. No, it's because my body does not enjoy cold.
Do they cut glass? Do they cut glass?
They do. Are you kidding me? You think they're obnoxious.
Well, I think you have a sideline business there.
Well, already.
Glass cutter. So
during this pre-party, you know, people get around, people are drinking. I ate a shrimp burger. I saw Melissa go to the bathroom. And then it was like 2 hours later.
What? Wait a minute.
She went to the bathroom, and like 2 hours later.
What are you watching?
2 hours later, it's like, where's Melissa? Did she leave without saying goodbye? Apparently, she was still in the bathroom. And Melissa, please explain yourself.
Okay, so I go into the bathroom, and first of all, there are druids in there because one of the bands was getting ready, and they kind of dress up druid-like. So the ladies were in there getting dressed up, and I went in there about the same time a couple other female webcomicers walked in there, and we were kind of chatting with the band because they, you know, these girls were all dressed up, and they looked really cool, and Stacy took photos of them. And, well, I think there were three of us at first, and, you know, we did our thing, and we're washing our hands, and we just started chatting in there. And as more and more female webcomicers kept coming into the bathroom, we just kept talking and amassing people. So there were like seven or eight ladies in the bathroom having an impromptu comics panel in the bathroom. And eventually they got me telling stories, which of course pulled more people in. And Stacy took a series of photos of me explaining, first of all, furry fandom and telling stories about Phil Plait and the Galapagos Islands. And I think eventually about Harry Knowles setting balloons on fire with a laser. And I think she's going to post them online at some point as a comic in themselves. But eventually we all decided we should make a comic here in the bathroom. So Stacy magically out of thin air whips out books, sketchbooks, and we all started drawing. So we collaborated on this 4-page comic. Each of us drew a panel or two in the bathroom. And emerged a couple hours later with a fully formed comic. So after that, we started hitting Kinko's locations in Minneapolis, which were all closed. But we eventually found one in the morning. And by the time Mix rolled around Saturday morning, we had a comic at the show. that we had made the night before in the bathroom.
This is exactly what I mean by the X Factor and low impulse control. People are like, no, I'm not going to hang out in the bathroom. I'm going to go out there. No, low impulse control. Next thing you know, you've got a comic for sale at Mix.
Well, was it for sale or did you just give it out?
No, we were just giving it out. It was just a four-page black and white folded thing. So whoever of us had a table at the show, they all had copies at their table and we were just giving them out.
What a brilliant
show. We made 100 copies and I think most of them were went with people that weren't us. So it was successful, I suppose.
Excellent.
So yes, this is X Factor, I suppose. Yes. Drawing comics in the bathroom.
That's major X Factor. Just do it. The more often you say yes, the better off life seems to be. I am convinced of this.
You say yes.
Yes is a good word.
I think my entire life is X Factor. No.
I think we got the X Factor confused. My X Factor, when I'm explaining X Factor, that's the completely crap that you cannot have control. This is the make your own luck we're talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know. I am going to say that I don't think there's really much X Factor at all. I think it has to do with because, you know, when you talk about connections, you have connections because you say yes. Because you went to that party, you showed up at that bar, you went to that concert.
I know. That's why I put luck and connections in its own category now. Connections/luck.
But what I'm saying is that I don't know that there really is ever an X Factor. If you stick with something long enough, eventually conditions out there will be right for it to be popular.
My only point was things you cannot directly control versus luck is something that you can sort of have somewhat of a say in. I basically wanted to say that sometimes there's things you cannot control. And I think that's humility, though. That's you can't control everything is what I want to say is really important.
Okay. Well,
but I won't call it X Factor, but...
Well, I think what Fess is getting at is that... Well, recently, Eric of Blanket Comics put up a website called Feeding Objects, which is just photos of people feeding food to inanimate objects. And it went up, about 2 weeks ago? And it got boing-boinged.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's X Factor.
Yeah. You can't plan to have it boing boings. You can't have plan those kind of
I'd
things.
Be
and
happy.
I'll give you that.
I'd be happy with just one boing.
I think that what I'm talking about is star factor. There are those people that, you know, they have that draw. Melissa, you have star factor. You walk into a room, somebody knows you. Somebody was at a concert with you. Somebody was at, you know, whatever else. And you have that presence of someone who, well, has low impulse control. And tiara does help. I've noticed it in my own life, depending on, because I have fairly radical shifts in... You know, where I'm at, I can be depressive, and when I'm depressive, I don't have it because I say no to everything. But when I'm not, when I'm on the other end of the spectrum, which is where I'm heading now, and it's yes to anything, people want to know you. And I really think it has to do, I think that's what that draw is low impulse control.
Well, actually, I think I have a different way to put it, is one of the basic tenets of improvisational comedy or improvisation in general on a stage is yes and.
Uh-huh.
If you go onto a stage and do improv, if you're paired with somebody, if they give you a lead, you can't say no to it. You have to pick it up. If you are miming holding something and the person says, "Oh, hey, I see you have a birthday cake," you can't say no, it's a bomb. You have to roll with it and say, yes, happy birthday, or something like that.
Right.
You have to pick it up and go with it. Now, there are ways to break those rules, but you got to be brilliant with it, like Eric McEwen is, because he's also an improvisational actor here in Minneapolis, and he's brilliant. But, it's the yes and. If life hands you a banquet of steaming poo, well, maybe you have to carve a model of Devil's Tower out of it and say this means something.
And that makes perfect sense.
Oddly enough.
The yes and, it's very important. And you actually just illustrated another brilliant point of this. When you are a yes and person, you are an authority on a number of things. People will stop and listen because you have something to say, because you have the experience, because you said yes. And that's another thing that makes people a draw. You know, if anytime anybody asks a question, you pipe up with an answer that you didn't pull out of your ass, but you pulled out of your life, people are going to know who to go to next time. That's a huge deal. Huge.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, even your disasters are successes. I mean, even if it's something that you did yourself, you screwed up royally, make something out of it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the worst weekends of my life was a weekend I spent in the city of Gibraltar with gastroenteritis. But by God, I have the best story ever.
I have a great uncle who says that never say no to a good story. And it's that same kind of idea that, you know, even some of the things that seem like the worst idea ever, like perhaps spending a weekend in Gibraltar with gastroenteritis, it's still going to make a great ass story. So go ahead and go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm talking with John, just to detract a little bit. I'm talking with John Peters, who does Gypsy Girl from GypsyGirlPress.com, and he's so down on himself about that book. I didn't know I had family in Minnesota because somebody bought the book.
He sold the book.
Yeah, I sold the book to a guy who's like, oh, I remember seeing this before, and I wanted to get it before, but then he did get it, but he didn't have any money. So I said, okay, if you promise to PayPal me, I'll give it to you, and he did. So yay,
hooray!
So,
X Factor, John, or people, Star Factor, just keep saying yes.
I'm looking forward to
the new Ardra.
Oh yeah,
I know. John Peters is. Do I understand that John Peters is the new artist for Ardra?
Yes.
I don't think I've been so excited in a long time.
He's doing the lines. I'm doing the color.
Brilliant.
And I've got pressure to do the color because I'm looking at the lines. It's like, uh-oh. Yeah. So I got.
If you want to feel bad about yourself as an artist, watch John Peters draw for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's depressing. He's brilliant, and he flips out so easily.
So is he like watching Sergio Aragona's draw? It's like he's tracing something that isn't there.
Yeah, exactly. It's creepy. He and the only other person I've ever seen, well, Stan Yan does that, and also David Wolf, who does Paranoia High. You know, you look at their sketches, they're ink ready sketches. Yeah. They look perfect. And there's no eraser marks, there's no stray lines. It's just, I don't know. It has to spend years and years of practice, but it's brilliant.
I can't get by without my Commander Eradicator.
Commander Eraser.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever seen Sergio Aragona's draw?
Oh, yes! Oh, I got to see that at Comic-Con 3 years ago. Yeah. I was beside myself.
Isn't that just the most amazing thing you've ever seen in your life, watching that man draw? He draws like he's telling a joke.
It was horrifying.
Yes, it just appears on the page. He takes a Sharpie without even an idea in his head, and he just starts going. And there's a comic there, and it's brilliant, and he can sell it for $500.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, and it was complete. I never, I sat there just like in awe. You just stare at him, and he never put out a dud the whole time I was watching, and he never put out one where he started and was like, no, this isn't going anywhere, and put it aside. It was always perfectly encapsulated and just immediately done in Sharpie.
Yeah.
For
those of you who don't know who we're talking about, Sergio Aragonés is the guy who does all the little tiny comics in the borders of Mad Magazine, and he's been doing it since the 60s.
Yes.
The man is brilliant. And I think he's also the most adorable person in the comics. He is just adorable.
Yeah. He also did the animation cartoons for Press Your Luck.
Yes, and America's Funniest Home Videos.
Yeah, yeah.
Funniest Home the Videos shorts.
Yeah, pretty much.
Bloopers and Practical Jokes, I think he
did that. You might be.
Bloopers and Practical Jokes is what it was.
Oh, maybe that's what it was, yeah. But yeah, pretty much if you see his comic, you go, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Because nobody looks like Sergio. No,
the little Mexican guys with the mustache and the little sombreros. Yeah, him! And
he looks like that. He's a little Mexican guy with a mustache.
He's tiny and cute, and you want to cuddle him and take him home and make him draw on your walls. Holy crap! Anyway,
this is
make him draw on the baseboards. That's. So you have it in the borders, you know. You just.
Yeah, I'm bringing a baseboard to the next Comic-Con. Where is it? I'm going to pull up the baseboards of my bedroom and bring them.
Oh, genius idea. You know those wallpaper borders that go around the room?
Oh.
He'd design one. He'd make millions. Oh. Or at least hundreds, but
I'm already saving.
Guess what?
Actually, I think I'm going to do an open house and have all my cartoon friends come in and draw on my walls.
That'd be awesome.
That would be cool. I'm going to have to say, this is probably going to be a two-part episode.
Awesome. Let's keep talking.
Because I have to add the Evan Dom interview into here. And if the audio is good, I will have to make it two episodes. One will be Crash Course and one will be Mix, I guess.
There you go.
Okay. Should we talk more about Mix? Or
did you
already cover that when I wasn't listening?
I'm not sure. We didn't talk about it too much. I do want to say, go back to John Peters, who said, yes, he did say yes once to having 1,000 books printed. It wasn't too good of an idea. So, sometimes yes can get you into trouble. I want to make sure that the Webcomic Beacon is not responsible for anything you say yes to.
Well, we need to be clear that I've said yes to some really frightening things. I could have wound up in trash bags on the highway, which would have been somebody else's good story. So, you have to use a little bit of common sense. If you don't have any survival instinct, then, that's a problem.
Yeah, it all rolls down to really good improvisational skills, and you never get those skills unless you use them. So practice, practice, practice.
I think that we actually should we could do an entire episode on con presence, because I've seen a lot of people with amazing work who have a subtle con presence, and if you
talking about me, aren't you?
Maybe if you have, and,
maybe.
Well, John and I have talked about this too. That if you have a subtle con presence, you're not necessarily going to sell this really amazing work. And I've seen where people will step out of their booth for a second, and somebody else who has con presence will take over their booth for a few minutes and sell more in those few minutes than the other person did all day. It's the same work. So I think that's something we should hit on.
Good call.
It can be learned.
It can be taught. And if this is a double episode, I will just say if an accidental double episode ever happens, this sponsor will get both. So so you lucked out, sir. If in fact I do break the show up into two different downloads, We'll see how well that Evan Dom interview goes. I may have to add some extra audio, but let me open up a new recording.
So Melissa, on the Geek Life, you guys are going to take some time, I trust, to talk about the passing of Mr. Horkheimer.
Yeah,
we probably will.
Jack Horkheimer, the Star Hustler, passed away at 72. Doggone it.
I guess lots to talk about there. I'm not that old.
Yes.
What do you mean you're not that old?
I don't know who the hell you're talking about.
He's been on PBS every night for years.
Well, I don't watch PBS.
He was on like 2 weeks ago.
I don't have TV programming. And as soon as I got Nickelodeon, I didn't watch anything else when I was a kid.
Love Jack Horkheimer. He was like the Rip Taylor of astronomy.
Yeah, pretty much.
He looked a lot like Rip Taylor.
He was Rip Taylor of astronomy. I loved him. So there you go.
Yeah, we will probably at least do a small section on him.
I should hope so. Arabesque, yes, is the theme, if you're interested. Debussy, by Claude Debussy. Arabesque. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Are you ready, Fess?
Hang on. One second.
No, do like the little segments. Things like that.
The astronomy segments?
No, for Jack Horkheimer's show. I don't think anyone's going to pick up the torch. You know what I mean?
I don't think so either, which is...
Which is really sad.
Okay.
But,
well,
anyway.
So just to pad out a little bit, I talked with Mark a little bit about what kind of like what mix was. And okay, I'm gonna take this part, and then Melissa can correct me. Apparently, you know, I'm being introduced more to the community, the artistic community, and I'm really realizing how much of art in this city is artistic community is in old abandoned-esque buildings. Which looked like if I walked by, I would think I'd probably get stabbed or shot by because it looks like...
You're so frickin' paranoid.
I'm sorry. I'm driving down this, what you can possibly call a road. I don't know how many sort of like layers of fix tar is on this thing. And there's like sand and gravel. There's an apartment, a parking lot in the middle of nowhere behind this alley, behind the train tracks. It's this dilapidated building. It don't even look like there's anybody home, and I'm trying to find this place. And then there's all this other stuff.
You're a hick.
I'm not a hick. I just don't see this stuff.
I grew up in areas like that.
You're
Screw
a rube.
You.
But you know, then I'm like, driving down to where the mix was held in a place called the Soap Factory. So it's like,
Soap Factory is awesome.
Okay, wait. Let me describe it from my perspective. Then you can describe it. So I'm driving down. I'm trying to find this place, and it's like behind some train tracks and everything. I'm driving around. I'm looking around. Where is this place? Where is it? It's that place. It has the Soap Factory painted on the side. I'm like looking at this. I'm looking at the truck delivery bay, which is all. The tar's kind of like disappearing towards the building. It's like sand now. And the whole exterior of the building looks like it hasn't been touched in years. There's cracks and holes in the windows with like little foam cubes stuck in the holes so that it keeps
For anyone
somewhat...
listening, what Fess is displaying is what we like to call middle class paranoia.
Yes.
Holy crap.
It looks like there'd be homeless people in there.
I couldn't go in the warehouse.
Did you say middle class? I don't.
Middle class.
I am not middle class. I don't even make $25,000 a year. I'm lower class.
No, you're not. If you think it only has to do with how much money you make, then you're definitely middle class.
This is suburb.
No, I couldn't go to the warehouse district. No, get stabbed. Those city fellers.
People who are intrinsically sort of made fearful by, you know, buildings that haven't been upkept, that's a middle class kind of thing.
I could say
ever
suburb.
City,
I don't think
if you've ever lived in a lower class area, you're very used to that, and it doesn't ring those alarm bells. If you've lived in suburbs and apartment buildings your whole life, it does. And that's what I mean by middle class paranoia. A building with extra tar and a few cracks is not a scary
thing. A few cracks.
Honey.
Dude, the building's so old it has wood support beams.
Yeah.
It's old.
So it has
It could fall in on us.
It's called the Soap Factory because it was an old soap factory.
Would you
it's
feel better
warehouse.
If it was made out of particle board instead of real wood?
No.
He wants steel beams. He wants steel.
No, I'm just trying to explain how old this thing is. It doesn't even have steel
IKEA.
Support structure.
Yeah, welcome to Minneapolis. We were founded by the grain industry. And
old does not equal frightening.
Oh, there's trees in that building.
Stop.
Hey, trees.
Oh, yeah. Trees.
I like trees. What are you talking about?
Go on.
I'm not trying to call you out.
Sure you are.
Well, yeah, you are.
A little bit. But I mean, I'm not trying to humiliate you. Let's put it that
way. Sure you are.
I've recently, the only reason that it really hits me is that I recently noticed this in my daughter. We went down to, Denver. It wasn't even like a bad section of Denver. It's not like it was, old Five Points. It was just Denver. It was just inner city. And she was a little closer to me and a little weirded out. And we talked about it later, and that's the conclusion we came to. She's lived in suburbs her entire life. She's never been in a place where things are dirty and older and not kept up. And so she, automatically was kind of fearful in that environment. And it's
about
very...
Your house. About...
Well, no, it's falling apart for different reasons. No, it's not like freshly painted and beautiful. That she can handle. But okay. We're talking, steel steps going up to, questionable loft apartment kind of things and, graffiti on trash cans and alleyways and those kind of things she wasn't really used to. And I'm noticing it more and more as societies get segmented and pushed farther from the cities that people...
It's the city!
People react in fearful, and it's sad.
Honestly, the only time I've been a victim of crime was when I was living in the country. I spent 6 months living outside of St. Cloud.
St. Cloud is not the country.
I was living on 40 acres of land.
That sounds awesome.
Internet connection doesn't qualify as a crime, Melissa.
No, my house was broken into and all my photography equipment got stolen.
Well, that's a crime.
That is a crime.
I do have to say that I was, I had all the windows in my car busted out by a gang, and that occurs. And it occurred because I didn't belong there. I understand why it occurred. I get it. It was a nice little message. It does happen. I'm not going to say that it's completely, without crime, but that was really an unusual kind of occurrence. And, it was drunk kids. It wasn't career criminals. So... I don't know. Meanwhile, I've had friends mugged, in the middle of suburbia for their hat. Had the crap kicked out of them and their bike stolen, I think it's a popularized notion that is built on falsehood.
Old buildings does not equal crime area.
What would you do in London?
Yeah,
or New Orleans, where even the really there are posh hotels in New Orleans where you're spending $300-$400 a night that are falling apart because of the salt water. They look like crap from the outside. It old happens. London is way worse than, hey, if you can find a flat without holes in the walls, you're a plus.
The Soap Factory is an amazing venue it is now an art gallery. That is run by a collective, if I remember right. But it's this fabulous old warehouse with huge rooms and old torn up wood floors and big steel doors with peeling paint. And the thing is just amazing. There are many places in Minneapolis like this, like Altered Aesthetics, which is where the after party was at. But I mean, they're big old warehouses that can be had for cheap, and artists take them over and turn them into galleries and working spaces.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I do like old stuff and exploring old stuff, like abandoned stuff in the middle of nowhere. But like in a city, that always makes me like I had no problem. I had a little bit of a problem going to this abandoned factory, which nobody was supposed to go into, but Heidi wanted to take a bunch of pictures and stuff there, so we walked up, and she was getting all freaked out about, oh, the floors could collapse, and because there were reports that people did fall through the floors, because they're there were these cemented, planks that were breaking away and everything, but, that was kind of cool, but, I was, driving to this place, looking, is anybody gonna find this? Is anybody gonna trust to go here? Because this is in the city, so, I don't know, I had this paranoia. But
no shit.
I think it has become more commonplace. So what I'm basically saying is, it's not that I blame you for being afraid in kind of an inner city area. It's really been popularized. It's really been pushed on us that's something to be afraid of. And unfortunately, it's having a huge economic toll on these areas, which is why I get so passionate about it. There are these amazing stores, you know, these mom and pop restaurants, these things that have been just, they're freaking cultural icons, and they're dying, not because they suck, but because people are afraid to go where they are.
And people are afraid to say yes, and I don't recognize the name on the front of that store. I won't go in.
Right. If it's not Safeway, I won't shop there. But we really have been fed this idea that Safeway, all the food there is safe, but the carniceria on the corner, it's probably all full of disease and isn't somehow regulated by the FDA, even though they work in America. You know, meanwhile, the carniceria on the corner had a local butcher take local cattle and local, you know, stock to make all of their stuff. And it's a billion times better than the stuff that's been injected with red dye and who knows what at the big megalomart.
Yeah.
But we've been fed this idea of safety, and it's killing a huge
homogeny.
Yes.
I
don't want it in that world.
I wanted to talk a bit about the Mix after party, which was held at Altered Aesthetics, because I want to bring this back home to comics a little bit more. Because, you know,
can I get off topic or what?
There was, at the gallery, they were actually hanging original comic art. I think to this sort of annual collected mini comic box set of stuff. You know, it's called
Lutefisk Sushi Group.
I hate Lutefisk.
It's a horrifying thing. No, I agree. It's sushi, on the other hand, very good.
Awesome.
Okay. Yes. But yes, the Lutefisk. Yeah, I've lived in Minnesota all my life. Lutefisk. Why can I not say Lutefisk? Lutefisk Sushi yearly puts out what is called a bento box, and it's a little box that is just full of webcomics.
Wow.
Yeah, and you buy it for $25, and it is a shoebox full of comics. It is very, very cool. So the original art was mostly, I think mostly or entirely, the Lutefisk Sushi.
Yeah, we're all hanging on like picture frames and chains and everything. It looked kind of cool, like a gallery setup. And the after party was basically almost like an AA meeting. It's an Artist Anonymous meeting.
An AAA meeting.
Yeah.
Artist Alley Anonymous.
And they were all just kind of talking about, they're going off this checklist of stuff. And then suddenly people started breaking off and having conversations and such. So, but that was really kind of cool. And, you know, there were a lot of people with webcomics at Mix, and that was really great. And, one of the surprises, I guess, was Christopher Hastings of Dr. McNinja was there. I was like, some little, first-time Minnesota thing. Hey, wow, you know, it's like someone really recognizable from out of state. Of course, Evan Dahmer was also from Minnesota, but New York, but most recently moved there. And he was coming in too, but so it seems kind of weird to see some of these people show up for you would never expect them there, and so I want more of that.
But I think the fact that it was almost entirely local is what really made Mix a really special thing, because there are comics shows in Minnesota. There's two put on every year by the MCBA organization, and they bring in people from DC and DC comics, not
right,
Washington DC, but sometimes Washington DC, and Marvel and Dark Horse and blah blah blah. And, you know, not huge, huge names. And there's always local people there, too.
Yep.
But there are always dealers and all that. Whereas this show was just...
an expo.
Small press.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Small press or no press. And people who were just sitting there with drawing stuff and photocopying it and stapling it together. Or, you know, small press publication. And that is all it was. And I have traveled to many, 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 many conventions, and this is a type of show I've never seen before.
We have a couple that are comparable. It's the same kind of thing. They're all self-published, all local artists, but they tend to be very small.
This was
old churches and libraries and stuff. So
this was pretty big. Like they're talking about Soap Factory might not be big enough for next year's.
Wow.
Mix. Yeah, it was, and it was popular enough. And what was also brilliant about it was free to attend.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, we had to pay for our own tables though. Yeah.
What was that?
We had to pay for our own tables though.
Yeah, it wasn't much though. It was like $20 a table. It was a small entry fee, but it was free for the public to attend, which means if it's somebody who's got kind of marginal interest in comics, but it's like, hey, I've got 15 minutes and I'm nearby, let's go see what it's about. There is no investment to get in. It was a very different crowd. People dropping in, seeing what was going on. They're interested. They stuck around. They stuck around all afternoon. And it was great. It was just a really great show.
There is a very different feel to, just the artist only kind of like expos rather than conventions. There's a very different feel to it. It's not as much of a merchandise feel. It's not as much of a hard sale kind of feel. It tends to be really friendly and conversational. I've met some amazing people at, just those tiny little artist things. And John was just mentioning that Cowtown Comics Festival was last weekend, and it's the same kind of thing. And those are brilliant. I love those. There needs to be more of those.
I agree.
Awesome. And I don't think I can really wrangle this show back to webcomics at all. So I think I'm going to have to close this episode off. There's likely well enough here. I just want to make sure the Evan Dom interview is good. And the Evan Dom interview is going to be on the Minneapolis Indie Expo episode. And I am probably going to save the goodbyes for both of them. So, reuse them. So, if you already heard these goodbyes, it's because I did copy-paste them. But we're going to get going. And I do have to say, if you enjoyed this, tell us about your local art expos. But
don't do it by exposing yourself. We don't need those pictures.
Unless you're maybe.
Unless
really
you're
hot.
I didn't want to be shallow.
Now it needs to be hot by committee. If you think
hot
you're hot
by committee,
you need somebody else to agree with you before you start sending us photos. That's what I'm saying.
You should be a girl. I'm just going to put.
Well, I didn't want to.
Okay, yeah. I guess I can handle only girls. I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, that's not my thing. It's going to be hard to please all four of us. Just saying.
Okay, here's the deal. You can send them to me personally, and then I pass those on to Melissa. So Mark and Seth will be spared any masculine hotness. However, I expect to be in on the loop with the girls, too.
Well, anyway, so that comes to a conclusion of, I guess, what is now episode 131. This has been Fess of TooManyThingsToList.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesAndShit.com.
This is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
This is Melissa of TinLizardProductions.com.
And this week, y'all got a special of two episodes. I hope you appreciate it. God damn it, no.
Two for the price of one.
And on the 29th of August, we will be having our readers episode, and hopefully I coordinated them all well correctly. And we will be at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on that day. So see you then.
That's all for now. Tune in next time at webcomicbeacon.com.
Hello, you're on the Webcomic Beacon. Yes, you are.
Why?
I don't know,
because...